Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com. /Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com /Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. We're talking today to Dr. Dale Bredesen. He's a pioneer in the study of neurodegenerative disorders and proposes a very comprehensive program for reversal of cognitive decline. Yes, it is not inevitable. It can be reversed, but it requires a highly tailored, multifaceted approach, and we've begun to outline that approach in part one. Dr. Bredesen will be appearing July 1 through 3 at the Omega Institute. That's in Rhinebeck, New York. At a special workshop entitled Hope for Dementia and Alzheimer's Disease. It's open to clinicians, but it's also open to the general public. If you or a family member are afflicted with a problem like this, it would be well worth your time to attend that workshop, because those workshops at Omega are excellent. And he'll be joined by Dr. David Perlmutter, who is a frequent guest here on Intelligent Medicine, author of Grain Brain, and Dr. Mark Hyman. So you're sure to get a very, very substantial grounding in this multifaceted approach to address cognitive problems. So in part one, we discussed your approach, but you've emphasized to me that early intervention is important because, you know, unlike the conventional medical model where you check in with, you know, you can't remember who your relatives are, it's best to early identify risk factors, maybe through some genetic analysis, but also get in early when the symptoms start to appear.
Absolutely. And you can think about Alzheimer's disease as four very broad phases. There is a pre-symptomatic phase when you can already see abnormalities, for example, on a PET scan, but the person is asymptomatic. There is then what we call SCI, subjective cognitive impairment, where the person knows there's something wrong. Often the spouse will know there's something wrong, but the person is still testing within normal limits, for example. And then that can be a decade, and may well be a decade, as it frequently is. Then from there, one can go into what's called MCI, or mild cognitive impairment. At that point, you know there's a problem. The tests show it as well, but you can still do your activities of daily living, care for yourself, etc. And then, of course, the fourth phase is full-blown Alzheimer's disease, in which you begin to lose activities of daily living. So, as you know, in the past, people have waited. They don't want to come in because they know that there's nothing that can be done. That has changed. And so, yes, the earlier, the better. We would like people to identify, find out your genetics, find out your APOE status early on so that you can get on the program. What we say is at 50 years old, you should have a colonoscopy. At 45 years old, you should have a cognitive assessment, or anything over 45. Come in for a cognitive assessment, find out where you stand, find out where your biochemistry stands, find out your genetics, and then you can get on a program. And we have actually, we have a book coming out on this next year that goes through all the nuances of, you know, here are all the things to check, here are all the things that will actually help you, here is the protocol to get on to make sure that you prevent this problem or reverse the problem if it's early on. The longer you wait, you know, no different than any of these chronic illnesses, you know, cancer, heart disease, etc., the longer you wait, the more difficult it is to completely reverse the problem.
So you have developed a therapeutic system. It's individualized because you say there are different subtypes of cognitive decline. But our listeners are interested in supplements, specific supplements that may be of benefit. Now, we don't want to offer a cookbook approach, take this, that, and the other thing, and, you know, you'll be on your way to a Nobel Prize and, an IQ of 175. It's not like that. Right. But what are some of the key supplements that can make a difference for people suffering from cognitive decline?
Right. And again, as you said, supplements are not by any means the whole program, but they are an important part of it. They are a part that will help you to optimize your biochemistry. So absolutely an important part of this. And again, what we do is personalized. So we have an algorithm, and in fact, we've worked with a group in Silicon Valley, so we have an extensive algorithm that collects many, many different pieces of information and generates a plan. But for many people, there is a core. So for example, we typically have people, among many other things, taking, for example, ashwagandha. Ashwagandha turns out, again, you have to get it from the right place. It has to be the right amount. It has to be appropriate ashwagandha. But it turns out that ashwagandha actually increases the ability of your cells to bind and withdraw amyloid from your system. So a good thing for people to be on in general to reduce overall the amyloid that, again, it is a protective response of the brain, but it is also something that contributes to the downsizing that is associated with Alzheimer's disease. And then Bacopa monnieri is another piece of this, which improves cholinergic function, for example. For some people, again, this is personalized.
For our listeners, we have an entire podcast coming up on the subject of Bacopa, so we'll listen for that coming up in a couple of weeks. Go ahead.
Fantastic. And then, of course, some people also, it will be appropriate, Hericium erinaceus, which is the lion's mane, is another thing that can be very helpful. Of course, we want to also optimize your vitamin D levels, very standard thing, I think, for people to do. And there's, of course, a lot of controversy around what is an optimal vitamin D level. And, of course, to take this with vitamin K2, also very important to that. I'm sure, again, you've talked about this in past and future podcasts. And then, of course, we want to, the bottom line is we want to optimize your biochemistry. That is critical. So, of course, that includes specific hormonal optimization. So you want to know, what is your status of testosterone and free testosterone? What is your status of pregnenolone? So some people will be taking pregnenolone. We had one endocrinologist who told us this is a pro-hormone, it really doesn't do anything. I disagree completely. In fact, it has clear effects on the brain. And of course, especially for people with pregnenolone steel, this is an important area to consider. So that's another common one that some people will be taking, again, in a personalized way. And then status of course, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy is critical. We want to look at also things like your free T3 to reverse T3 ratio and to optimize that. We want to look at your free T4, of course, to optimize that. So there are many, many different things that contribute to this. Interestingly, what I have to say, when resveratrol first came out, I thought, this is unlikely to have much to do with Alzheimer's disease. I was wrong. It turns out that actually resveratrol is quite important and quite interesting. It turns out that part of the balance that we discovered for APP signaling that is related to the synaptoblastic, synaptoclastic activity relates directly to your balance between SIRT1, the sirtuin, and NF-kappa-B. And in fact, your cells have a critical balance between those two types of signaling. If you're more on the inflammatory side, that's the NF-kappa-B side, of course. If you are more on the longevity side, the metabolic side, the non-inflammatory side, then you're more on the SIRT1 side. And interestingly, those two are mutually antagonistic. So once you activate your NF-kappa-B, you actually decrease your SIRT1. And one of the interesting things we found in the laboratory, this was published about a year ago, was that, in fact, APOE4 binds to the promoter of the gene for SIRT1 and decreases the amount of SIRT1 that you produce. So that if you look in the brain of someone who has Alzheimer's disease and is APOE4 positive, you will indeed see a reduced overall production of SIRT1. So as you know, resveratrol will activate, it literally reduces the auto-inactivation or the auto-inhibition of SIRT1 to give you a more active SIRT1, which leads you essentially toward the good side of the signaling for cognition on your amyloid precursor protein. So resveratrol turns out to be helpful, and similarly for NAD-related things, it's kind of another way to get at the same approach, nicotinamide riboside.
Which
is another way
has
to
been
go.
The subject of our most recent podcast. It's a very intriguing substance when it comes to neurodegenerative conditions.
Absolutely. I would agree with that.
Can we do a little bit of a lightning round on some potential supplements, some that you actually mentioned in your paper? Fish oil, in particular DHA.
Yes. Good point. So when you are making synapses, as Dr. Wertmann from MIT has shown over the last 25 years, extensive research, it's important to have both long-chain omega-3s. We're looking at, as you said, DHA. You want the 22 carbons, not the shorter ones. And then as well, you need to have the acetylcholine that he developed. And so we use both of those. And of course, as Paul Clayton has pointed out, omega-3s can actually be a problem. You really need to have things like secoiridoids or fluorotannins to keep these active. You've got potential problem there with just omega-3. So that's something that's critical. And then, of course, for some people, the work of Dr. Sirhan from Harvard on resolvins also important. And so, for appropriate people, we use those as well. And so that's another thing to include. So yes, the long chain omega-3s as well as acetylcholine are important. So the idea is, once you're now telling the brain, we're now going to give you a signal to make and keep synapses, of course you have to have the building blocks there. When they're ready, you've got the appropriate hormones now, the appropriate signaling, you've got to have the appropriate building blocks like omega-3s and like acetylcholine.
Okay, next in our lightning round is curcumin.
Curcumin is an interesting substance, as you know. It binds very tightly, both the amyloid and the tau, and so it helps in two ways, at least two ways. Number one is an anti-inflammatory effect, of course, and the second one is this effect of actually binding to amyloid and helping you to remove the amyloid. So curcumin, a good idea. As you know, problems there are with absorption, and so you typically want to take it either on an empty stomach or with some good fats.
Okay. Alcar, acetyl L-carnitine.
Yes, and again, a good thing, it actually increases nerve growth factor, so things that you can do to increase NGF, BDNF, and things like that are helpful.
Antioxidants.
Yeah, and I think to some extent they've been overplayed in Alzheimer's, with people arguing that's really the only thing you need. And
yeah, they used to suggest you take like 1,200 or 1,600 of vitamin E, and maybe the DataTop study didn't pan out with Parkinson's disease.
Right, and of course as mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols.
Preferably, right.
Yes, exactly.
When it comes to diet, is there such a thing as a cognitive decline preventing diet?
Absolutely. And we're looking at how to optimize that. There's been a lot written, as you know, about the Mediterranean diet, of course, about the, quote, mind diet. So I think people are still looking at that. But what we're finding is that you do want to be in a state of very mild ketosis. This does seem to be helpful. You want to be in a non-inflammatory, mostly plant-based diet. You want to follow your LDL particle number. You want to stay away, absolutely away from simple carbohydrates. If you want to have a little meat, that's fine, but meat should be a condiment. And of course, if you're going to do it, you want to take it as things like, grass-fed beef. Best, of course, would be wild-caught fish and probably ones that don't have big mouths and live long. So we have had a few people where clearly high levels of mercury contributed. And of course, people would argue that's not Alzheimer's. Well, actually, in fact, you make amyloid to bind to the mercury. So you do develop amyloid and you do develop what would be called Alzheimer's disease. And PET scan shows the same thing. So, in fact, you want to know what your mercury level is, both inorganic and organic mercury. So So again, you want to go back to a plant-based diet. And of course, you want to know, are you gluten sensitive? We typically, want to know if there's any evidence of gut leak. Is there any evidence of blood-brain barrier leak? And is there any evidence of response to glutenin or gliadin?
And some people are fans of taking MCT yeah. oil or coconut oil.
Yeah, and actually I think it's a very good idea. What you find is that one of the major things that you want to accomplish is to change fundamentally from a carbohydrate-based metabolism to a lipid-based metabolism. So yes, MCT oil, coconut oil, these are important parts. And again, one by itself is not going to be a cure for Alzheimer's disease, but as part of an overall program, these are very important.
It used to be dogma that people who were ApoE4, especially the double-hit homozygous folks, mm-hmm. should be on an ultra-low-fat diet. So on the one hand, we have yeah. the concern about insulin and simple sugars and carbohydrates in general. On the other hand, we have a concern about saturated fats. Where do you weigh in on that controversy?
Yeah, and by the way, that's an ongoing controversy, a very good point. And so one argument that's a point of the argument that's been suggested is, get on the MCT oil, get on the fat-based diet until you get rid of the insulin resistance. And as you know, there's a wonderful website, apoe4.info, that was founded by Julie G and her group. And I think it's a wonderful idea, and they do a great job. And all these discussions are online there. So this is something that is still being optimized. But what I argue to people is that you need to have the good fats. You need to get away from the carbohydrate-based diet. What has been suggested is once you're able to do that, once you're able to get that insulin sensitization back, then, be careful and look at your status. Follow your LDL particle number. Follow whether you are in mild ketosis. Of course, you want to include in there the at least 12 to 16 hour fast each mm-hmm. night.
So-called intermittent fasting.
Between end of dinner and, absolutely. And then, of course, the at least 3 hours from finishing dinner to going to bed.
Well, wow, that's a wealth of information encapsulated in a very short time. Where can folks find out more about this? I know you have a book in the works. We'll have to await that book. Perhaps we'll be able to invite you back on to launch that book when it comes out. You're saying in 2017?
Yeah, it should come out in the spring of 2017. Thank you very much for that. There's a website now, mticognition.com. You can look at that website. Yes, you're right. We could spend hours on each one of these subjects. These are all critical, and I think, as we talked about, there are controversies around some of them, looking at what is optimal. But the bottom line, I think, is that this is a new age. This is a new era where people are seeing that cognitive decline can be prevented largely and reversed in its early manifestations, and I think people are seeing this again and again and again. So we now need to continue. This is what we've published is toe in the water. We need to continue to optimize this. But I think we're, as one person said the other day, we're seeing the word Alzheimer's and the word hope brought together for the first time.
It's no longer an oxymoron, right?
Exactly.
So, and once again, let me emphasize that you have a wonderful opportunity, those of you who are in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, or those of you who want to come to the Northeast, July 1st through 3rd at the beautiful Omega Institute. It's a wonderful retreat north of New York City in a beautiful setting, July 1st through 3rd, Hope for Dementia and Alzheimer's Disease, with today's guest, Dr. Dale Bredesen, along with some very, very distinguished speakers, a panel of experts, including Dr. Mark Hyman and Dr. David Perlmutter. You can get information at the Omega Institute website, which is eomega.org. I guess if you go to omega.com, you'll get Omega Watches. So it's eomega.org. Thank you very much, Dr. Bredesen, for joining us, and congratulations on
thanks very really, much, Dr. Hoffman. I appreciate it.
Really wonderful, your wonderful research and your advocacy for such an important subject. Thanks
All
again.
Right. Thanks again.
Okay, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.